Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens, at the heart of Irish homes for over 40 years. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
The Israeli military has said that friendly fire has killed five soldiers yesterday in northern Gaza, where intense fighting in the Israel-Hamas war has resumed in recent days. Fighting has raged in Gaza while the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said Israel must do what is required in Rafah despite disagreements with its longtime ally at the United States. And the UN confirmed this morning it has run out of tents, it has run out of food to distribute to almost 2 million people in Gaza, because that Rafah crossing remains shut. Well, for more on this, we're joined by Caoimhe de Barra, who's CEO of Trokra. But first, I want to go to Belle True, the London Independent's chief international correspondent. Belle, thank you for being with us. To go back to what I mentioned there, Israel's confirmation of reports of friendly fire killing five soldiers in northern Gaza. What have they said and what has been happening in that region?
Well, so far, they said the investigation is ongoing, but the preliminary results of their probe is that this took place yesterday in northern Gaza's Jabalia area, where Israel has launched a new offensive recently, including evacuation orders of Palestinian citizens there. But according to the initial probe, a tank operating alongside paratroopers in Jabalia camp fired two shells at a building where soldiers were gathered. They said that the tanks basically had identified a gun barrel from one of the windows and believed it to be enemy forces, which led them to, you know, to end up killing five of their soldiers. The moment, the investigation is still ongoing, but it shed some light into the chaos that's happening in northern Gaza as they're pushing ahead with this offensive.
And the Israelis believe that Hamas has been rebuilding in the north. Is that right?
Yes, and that is why they've said that they have started this new offensive, which included evacuation orders of tens of thousands of Palestinian citizens, even more. Jabalia camp is heavily, densely populated by a lot of people who are displaced from other parts of the strip. People on the ground there have been telling me that it's been the most ferocious bombardment they've ever experienced. And there's obviously few places for civilians to go, but Israel maintains that it's one of the strongholds of Hamas, and they have to continue to achieve the objectives of their offensive.
And what is the latest then from Rafah at the other end?
Well, Rafah, of course, was considered one of the last refuges in Gaza. It was hosting around 1.4 million civilians, most of them displaced from other parts of the strip. The Israelis have pushed into Rafah, despite the fact that there's been widespread condemnation from even their closest allies, like the US, which is also one of their largest supplier of weapons. And they've pushed ahead. We now know that around 600,000 people are displaced from Rafah. I'm talking to people on the ground every day. They are telling me they're literally running with their tents under their arms and their belongings and their children, trying to find anywhere that is safe. The Israelis claim that there is a so-called humanitarian zone in an area called Mawasi, which is just north of Rafah. But everyone I'm speaking to on the ground says it's crammed. There's no space to put tents up. It's also come under bombardment and it's not safe. There's also concerns, of course, about food supplies, medical supplies, as the Rafah crossing, which is the main artery for aid coming into Gaza in the south, and in fact, the whole of the Gaza Strip, has been closed. And there's basically deep concerns that as the Israeli forces push deeper into Rafah, the death toll from the civilian side will surge considerably.
OK, and we'll speak more to Caoimhe de Barra about that situation in just a moment. Belle, I know that you speak regularly to the families of the hostages that are still being held by Hamas or by groups affiliated to them. How are they now? Have you been speaking to them recently? I mean, as time goes on, they have to be losing hope.
There is, I think the only way to describe it would be utter desperation. The vast majority of the families of the hostages want a ceasefire deal immediately and an exchange of hostages, because they want any situation that can allow their loved ones to come home. They've repeatedly been in the streets calling for the government to sign any deal possible to get their loved ones home. And, you know, they've actually been sort of partially camped outside the main military headquarters in Tel Aviv. Some of the families I've been speaking to have basically said it very simply. They said there is a potential deal on the table. The ball's in the Israeli government's court. They've got to sign it and bring their loved ones home, because their concern is their relatives, their loved ones are under that fire in Rafah and possibly even in Jabalia, that they too are subjected to the crushing lack of supply of food and medical supplies. And they're very, very worried that their loved ones will come home in body bags, not alive. There is a small contingent of families of hostages that do believe that military offensive will bring their relatives home. But the vast majority, you know, are in the streets in Tel Aviv saying, sign any deal, bring, you know, our sons, daughters, grandparents, children home.
Belle, thank you very much. Belle True there from the London Independent. And as I said, we have Chief Executive Officer with TROCRA, Caoimhe de Barra, with us as well. Good morning, Caoimhe.
Good morning.
So we got an outline there from Belle as to what's happening at Rafah. And the big issue is getting aid into Gaza now. We know the US have created that pier, which they say is anchored now, which may allow more aid in. But they said from the beginning, this is not going to replace the aid that could come through Rafah. And now are we at a point where there is nothing coming through?
Yes, that is absolutely the situation right now. The Rafah border and the Kerem Shalom border have been closed for 10 days. They've been closed since last Monday. So no food, no fuel, no other supplies, no medical equipment, for example, have come across the border into Rafah for the past 10 days. The World Food Programme has run out of food. Fuel will run out within days within the Gaza Strip. And this has huge implications. We are now seeing a situation where the threat of widespread famine and disease has never been higher. Over 600,000 people have fled from Rafah in the last week and a half. These are all people almost entirely who previously have been displaced. They're exhausted. Many of them are sick. Some of them are injured. Many of them are elderly or extremely young. The risk to very young people in particular of acute watery diarrhea, which we are hearing is becoming endemic in the so-called humanitarian zone that people have been forced to move to, is soaring. Along with that, you have the lack of access to food and to clean water. So people are in incredible danger. And that is not even to start talking about the danger that people are in from the constant shelling from air, land and sea. In fact, in the last 24 hours, we've seen the number of deaths reach the highest number of an average daily rate that we've seen for months.
Now, when you say this humanitarian zone, are you talking about this Al-Masawi area, which is a narrow coastal strip? This is where Israel has advised people, told people in Rafah to go to.
Yes, that is correct. And people are crammed into that area. It was already crowded before the latest order for evacuations, and it is now simply intolerably overcrowded. People are trying to find anywhere possible that they can go to. Many people are trying to get back to or have moved to Khan Yunis, which is destroyed. It is a city which is now in rubble and ruins, but people are desperate to flee Rafah because they know that the attacks are going to come to them. The attacks are gradually increasing across both eastern and central Rafah towards western Rafah. I was in touch with my colleague this morning and she was telling me how she is still in western Rafah, but she and her family will have to evacuate very, very soon because the threat is just becoming overwhelming.
It's for the staff along with everybody else.
Staff are affected in the exact same way as other civilians. So staff of aid agencies such as TROCRA's partners are barely able to respond even as the needs increase. They're displaced amongst the rest of the population, but they still do try and work very hard every day to bring the services that they are able to provide to people. So, for example, a colleague who works with the Medical Aid for Palestinians organization, which is a partner of ours, described how every morning he leaves where he is sheltering with his family, not knowing whether when he comes back in the evening, he will find his family alive or will find that they have also suffered from the bombing, which is ongoing, and shelling, which is happening constantly. And I think it's important to note that this is a situation which is entirely preventable and should be prevented by the implementation of the laws of war. Under international humanitarian law, depriving citizens of access to objects that are indispensable for their survival is a breach of international law. So, shutting the border, which people rely on to get access to food, to healthcare, to shelter materials, that is without question a war crime. It's a breach of international law. The fact that the aid pier has now docked will not solve these problems. People will still face the same dangers in terms of the distribution of aid from that pier and also in terms of the constant attacks that are also happening against aid agencies.
Now, Benjamin Netanyahu says that 500,000 people have left Rafah to that Al-Masawi area. And given that that is coastal, will the aid pier not help in some way once it becomes operational?
The aid pier is north of that area, but the point is that it is extremely difficult for all aid organisations to transport aid through the Gaza Strip. It is dangerous in first instance because of the constant risk of shelling. 268 workers have been killed to date, 31 of them in direct attacks either on their buildings or their vehicles. So it is dangerous to move even if you get clearance in advance from the Israeli authorities. And right now the problem is they're running out of fuel. So if there's no fuel for trucks, then those trucks that are loaded when the aid comes off the aid pier, they simply will not be able to move because that logistical challenge is growing greater all the time.
The Israelis have pointed the finger at Egypt. The foreign minister has told the UK and Germany about this need to persuade Egypt to reopen the Rafah crossing so that aid can come through. Are you aware that there's an issue there with the Egyptians?
This is somewhat mystifying because it is the Israeli government and defence forces that are in control of the border and in control of both Rafah and Kerem Shalom. So this we just do not quite understand from a humanitarian and an operational perspective. Really, it is the power lies with the Israeli government and with the Israeli defence forces to unblock the land access from both Rafah and Kerem Shalom. And this is something which is imperative because people are now dying literally at a higher rate than any rate we have seen so far in this crisis.
Are you reaching a point in Drokhar where you're very limited as to what you can do here now?
We've been very limited for months, but this situation is simply impossible and intolerable. If you cannot move any aid items over the border, what you're left with is just the skills of your colleagues on the ground. So our colleagues on the ground can provide psychosocial support and counselling to people in those one-to-one very important conversations. But again, in my conversations with my colleague on the ground, when I have asked, how is that working? They say people don't have time to talk. People are so busy searching for somewhere safe to move to, searching for clean water, searching for some food, that they can't avail of the very few services that are left available to them.
Can they move? I mean, I quoted that claim from the Israeli Prime Minister that 500,000 people have gone to that expanded humanitarian zone. So does that tell you that people can leave Rafah and get to that area?
People are leaving by whatever means they can. At the moment, because of the lack of fuel and the cost of it, many people are walking. They're walking with whatever items they have left, or they're using donkey carts, or they're pooling whatever meagre savings they have left to try and move multiple families in one truck, for example. But this has become extremely hard, and especially as people have become weaker over time. So elderly people who are sick or who are weak and younger children have been, some people have actually died on their journeys. So for example, a very young girl who was being supported by one of Trokhar's partners in Gaza, she and her family were, before the closure of the Rafah border, trying to reach the Rafah crossing to escape to Egypt. And this young girl in her early teens died of dehydration on the way. So people will always seek to move if they can. Some people will simply be too ill or too old or will not have somewhere to go to. And they are stuck in Rafah in this situation of constant shelling.
So we've spoken about how the Rafah crossing is closed to aid coming in. Can people still leave if they manage to get there?
No, it is entirely closed. Okay. Nothing is moving. No people and no goods are moving.
And are you getting any indication, or any aid agencies getting any indication as to when that situation might change?
At the moment, there appears to be a complete stalling on both sides. And this is really important because pressure needs to be bear, and more international pressure can be brought to bear on both sides. Situation is intolerable. There are violations of international humanitarian law happening all the time. And the death toll, as we know, has gone above 35,000. So at the moment, there doesn't appear to be any political opening. But that is a situation that we do believe can and has to change through international pressure.
Caoimhe, thank you very much for talking to us. Caoimhe de Barra from Drokhar there. And earlier we heard from Bell True from the London Independent.